Please be seated. We are in a few days where we are focusing on how we care for our bodies and how that connects in our life of faith. We've been exploring the last 2 years at St. Augustine's how the word stewardship encompasses a lot of what we do. It has in the past in the church at St. Augustine's, often only meant the money part that we do, usually in November. A lot of churches do that. It's kind of the fundraising month, and it was often called stewardship, which was helpfully connected to how we care for this community and how we care for ourselves in our offering to God. But unhelpfully, it made us think that stewardship only meant money. And so we've been expanding that over the last couple of years and saying stewardship is about how we care for all of what God gives us. And I'm excited this term, as we're kind of breaking apart how we care for ourselves. So this happens sometimes just in a newsletter that comes out, and occasionally on a Sunday when we're looking at this. So last Sunday we started talking about how we care for our bodies, and Pat shared her work as a massage therapist and how God called her into that and how she saw God in that work. I'd like to invite Paul to come forward and share with us part of his journey. We looked at people who have done care of body stuff professionally and invite them to make reflection for us. So Paul, would you come and share with us?
All right, I'll begin. When I think of stewardship, I think of time, talents, and treasures. And maybe that's my Lutheran upbringing. I don't know if that's an Anglican thing that people talk about time, talents, and treasures. But I definitely think about our bodies, our minds, and our health as a treasure and something to be treasured and viewed in that way. Now, when Jonathan asked me to speak to you about stewardship in our bodies from a physio perspective, I was so excited. The thing is, I had just been to this conference, and the topic was so close to my heart. It was called Exercise as Medicine, and I was going to put up PowerPoints and teach you guys all about the physiology and why and all the technical details. The opportunity to pass on this knowledge that I'm passionate about and to give you a lecture was like, yeah, right on, this is awesome. I love this. So I ran it by Jonathan. He said no. He said, no, I'd like to hear more about your story and what or who inspires you. That's tougher than just regurgitating some PowerPoints. So my story, and how does this stewardship look in my life? Well, I studied at the U of A, and I'm a physical therapist, also known as physiotherapist. And what is that? Well, you know, when I first graduated back in 1995, physio was having a bit of an identity crisis in the healthcare system. And so we were kind of caught between our British roots and being physiotherapists and the new North American term, physical therapist, or PT. Cool, fast to say, slick. Now, 24 years later, I think we have our identity clearly spelled out. It doesn't matter. Physio, physiotherapist, PT, physical therapist, it's all good to us. What we are is movement specialists, helping others to move optimally through life. There's many ways we do this, and the ones I'm going to talk about are more in the area of practice or the scope of practice that I'm mostly involved in now, which is private practice, dealing with people who work, who are athletes, people of all ages, but in more of a private practice setting than a hospital setting or a neurological setting, and there's lots of different settings, pediatrics where physios work, people work with amputees and so on. But I'm thinking more about my setting, coaching movement patterns, working on strength and flexibility, mobilizing and even adjusting joints, acupuncture and IMS dry needling, just to name a few. So how did I get where I am? Well, I had a pretty simple start. In high school, I was a passionate road cyclist, and with that came a few injuries, and those injuries took me to physio at a critical time when I was sort of at that crossroads. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? I thought about this physio that I was going to see, and I thought, this is pretty cool. Caring for people, caring for our bodies, involved in sports, involved in movement, science. I can get on board with that, and so on I went. Got into school, did my thing, graduated. Now, if you're already thinking that there's a theme of movement here, you may be right. I reflect back into my early days as a child, and I recall that I've always been enticed by movement and needing to move. However, when I think back to my early days in elementary school, I was that awkward kid in elementary when it came to movement, the last to be picked for every single team. I was always moving at my desk, though, and was easily distracted. I don't know, maybe I was a typical boy, maybe there's more to it, I'm not sure. Then I discovered that I was so much more attentive after I moved a lot. So in junior high, I would actually run 2 or 3 kilometers to and from school, and that made a huge difference for me. And when I was at U of A, I cycled from the east end of Edmonton over to the U of A all year round, and that made a huge difference, including exams. And I've continued this into my adulthood. My head is more clear and focused, and I'm more engaged and ready for whatever's to come when I've moved before I need to do something. My physio and career path story is not so conventional, however. About 5 years after graduating, I took a leave of absence. I'd been bit by the biathlon bug, if you've ever heard of that one, in university. And biathlon is the cross-country skiing and shooting sport. Very strange kind of combination. And at the level that I was competing at when I was working as a physio, part-time training just wasn't enough. So I took off a year and trained full-time, and 1 year blended into another. And after 6 years of full-time training, during which I lived part-time in Germany and part-time in Canada, and represented Canada and Alberta on the North American Cup circuit, the IBU Cups, the World Cups, and the World Military Championships, I started to realize that it might be time to wind down. So in 2005, as a 35-year-old, I had to make a hard decision to retire from biathlon, something that I loved so dearly. It was just part of who I was. I loved the competition, the training, and the travel. But I longed for other things in life, too. And I came away with questions. How is being so invested in sport, movement, etc., for oneself at all related to the greater good and to the world around me? Naturally, I should now return to my career path as a PT, right? Well, not me. Two other opportunities arose at that time. First one was more career-wise, and I really wanted to work with my hands. PTs work with their hands, but I wanted to work with my hands in a different way. So I retrained as a craftsman in the fine art of violin bow making. Very related, as you can see. Mixing my passion for the arts and music with creativity and science and working with my hands. At the same time, I also helped to start a program in Edmonton's inner city that targeted generationally impoverished elementary age youth, using running and reading and mentorship as tools, and helping them to see benefits directly in their lives of movement and exercise and literacy and reading. I still wasn't back to PT at this point, and things came full circle about 6 years ago, when I realized I was still missing a way to have impact directly in the lives and well-beings of others at a different level, and to use all that I had learned along the way this far. So I decided, let's look at returning to physio. What would that mean at this point? Well, no resting on my laurels, no saying I had done all my exams, completed my degree way back in the day. I'd been on the national biathlon team, and this was all good experience, and I had so much life experience to bring. Nope. I had to study full-time for a good year and rewrite and complete all the PT competency exams, which I did. So while my unconventional PT journey has had some gaps, I love what my varied life experience brings to my clients and those around me and my practice. But through it all, some things haven't changed. I'm still passionate about moving myself and about helping others to do the same. So let me tell you about a few clients and stories that have inspired me. Maybe they'll inspire you too. Firstly, this old thing that age is so much more than a number. So when I was 30, I looked and I saw 50-year-olds and thought, they're kind of old. And now that I'm turning 50, I look, you know how it goes, right? So a recurring experience that I've had with my clients, and particularly in the hospital, this has happened a whole bunch of times, and it's just really a really cool insight. It highlights this nicely. So we'll just talk about Mr. Smith and Mr. Doe. Now, I don't know these people. I've never met them before. I go to rounds in the morning. I get charts. I pull the charts out, looking at things like age, gender, background, what are they here for? What am I going to find when I go into the hospital room to that bedside? Who am I going to see? What am I preparing myself for? Now, most of the rooms in the hospitals, unless people are in isolation, have maybe 4 or 6 beds even in them. And so they're numbered or lettered. So we have room 6A, 6B, etc. So I know that I got to go to see Mr. Smith in room 6A. And I walk into room 6A, and I'm looking for this 85-year-old who is going to look like an 85-year-old. And I look in the corner where 6A is, and there's a 60-year-old sitting there, right? But he's got the bracelet on. I check the bracelet. It says Mr. Smith. That's weird. It doesn't look right. But his age is on there. He's 85, sure enough. On the other side, I've got Mr. Doe, who I've got to go see. Now, he's 65, and I walk into room 8D, and I'm looking over in the corner, and I see this 90-year-old guy sitting there. He's got the bracelet on. He must have made his way to the wrong bed. But I go and check the bracelet and talk to him, and sure enough, it is Mr. Doe. He's my 90-year-old, 65-year-old. So whenever I ran into this, I started to think, what about if I ask these people, what have you done in your life, particularly the ones that appeared younger than their years? And the takeaway that I seemed to get was, get outside and walk a mile each and every day. Every day. Don't miss it. There's no reason to. I had another client in the private clinic. We'll call him Mr. MD. He was actually a retired MD and emeritus professor at the U of A Med School. He was in his 80s, clear, bright, younger in his attitude than his numeric age. His advice was, walk every day as much as you can. And he said that speed matters. So don't just go and amble along and smell the roses. There's a time for that, but you do need to actually move. But at the same time, his big thing was you also shouldn't be sprinting. There's no longevity in that, and it's not sustainable. A couple of other gals I'd like to tell you about in their mid-80s that are current clients of mine that will put many 30 or 40-year-olds to shame in terms of their activity levels. They don't have time for sitting around and resting, these gals, I should say. You see, one is too busy getting her photographs together after a photography and hiking trip on Baffin Island, and the other just returned from exploring Yukon with one of her adult children. The similar lifestyles of their pasts were get outside, keep moving, engage the world around you. The takeaway, keep moving, and try and do so out in nature. But if you can't do it out in nature, there is a time and a place to just do it indoors as well. I love how the experience and advice of these gray hairs is supported by current science, too. So some fun facts. I am going to dive into just a quick bit of lecture stuff here, if you'll indulge me. This is the part where the PT in me just says, I have to give you some takeaway messages that are evidence-based, because everything we do today has to be evidence-based. And so here are some messages about caring for our bodies and why. So first of all, humans and animals love and need movement so much that we start in the womb. We've heard of this, right? Has everyone seen or felt that? For sure, right? It's just amazing that this independent movement can come from inside another. And one of my favorite stories is before we had Eric, but Solly was in the womb with Simone, and at that time I was playing a lot of fiddle, and I started playing the fiddle, and Simone was just relaxing, and it was in the evening, and all of a sudden, more than normal, we just saw this movement rippling through her tummy, and it was like he was literally and truly dancing to the music. It was unbelievable. We both just broke, like it was just a tearful, it was just a wonderful, amazing moment. So if you've ever experienced that, you get that. Now, this is no accident. Research shows that we need that movement in vitro, in the womb, in order for our joints to actually develop. Infants that are in the womb and don't move enough, their joints don't develop properly and aren't viable when they come to term. What about after we're born, though? We start to wipe or move around with proficiency. What then? Do we need to still move? I mean, we've developed all these great ways not to. We drive in cars, we've got great easy chairs, we've got computers and things that do everything for us. We can even have stuff delivered to our home. We don't even have to go shopping anymore. Amazon will bring it straight to you, right? Sorry, you're not off the hook. Our joints and bodies still need to move to be healthy. Now, there's the obvious reasons or the obvious things that matter. So we think about if we don't move, our muscles shrink. That's called atrophy. So muscle atrophy, circulation. The more we move, the better our circulation is. And if we don't do that, we start to lose that. But even if we get down to the nitty-gritty cellular level, our cartilage and joints, they're meant to move. And they age exponentially faster when we don't. And if we immobilize a joint, we actually see in short time, 6 to 8 weeks, that fissures and indentations start to appear on that nice, smooth, shiny cartilage surface that's supposed to be so slippery and give us good movement, but it happens so quickly just by not moving. The same sort of thing we would expect to happen if we abused our joints, and yet it happens faster by not moving than by abusing our joints. Interesting. And this is why protocols in my profession have changed over the years and over the decades. We used to think we need to put people in big casts and keep them from moving altogether when they're hurt, and now, if any of you have ever seen or known anyone who had a hip replacement, had a hip fracture, anything like that, we get them moving like the next day. Get on your feet. And people are often surprised by this, and I sometimes balk it too. Hey man, I just broke my hip yesterday. Don't you know that? Didn't you read the chart? You can't get me up now. No, man, you need to move. Now, in longevity research, and this is my plug here, each one of us needs to get a minimum of 150 minutes of vigorous exercise activity per week. So I constantly have to tell my mom and my mother-in-law that the stuff around the house and the garden doesn't count. It comes after that. So ideally, we also add some strength training to this to maintain muscle strength and bulk. This is the good stuff that helps us keep going for many, many years and be able to use this body that we've been given to our best. I'd also like to just quickly tell you about a book called Spark. Now, Spark was sparked by a number of studies on brain activity, cognition, IQ, and physical activity. Not only is this vigorous movement and exercise good for our physical body, it's awesome for our brains and vital. After we exercise, we have increased alertness, cognition, creativity, IQ, decreased anxiousness, and cortisol levels, which equals decreased bad stress. I told a mom of a biathlon friend about this during one of our running and reading events, and she came out to help at. And she said, "Paul, I could have told you that." You see, she was an elementary teacher, and she had discovered that her classes were so much better off with all of the scholastic and music activities that they were doing if she had more regular activity built into her day. So she did it on her own accord, not just by Alberta Ed standards, okay, we need to have this phys ed stuff, and she took it out of that scholastic time but found that her kids actually surpassed what they were doing before by including that regular movement in their days. So what has all this meant for me and my lifestyle? What are the things that I'm doing on this front personally, you might wonder, with all this personal experience? Well, to sum it up, I'd say that God has given us access to some superpowers to use in our stewardship of health, of body and mind. But we need to engage and use those superpowers in order for them to actually do us any good. Any guesses what the superpowers are? There's been a few themes today. I'm going to highlight a few, but I'm interested to see if any of you have any other ones that you can think of after. So first of all, I didn't talk about this yet, but one of our superpowers definitely is sleep. Regular sleep, minimum 8-hour window at the right time of day will literally increase your well-being, effectiveness, healing, cognition, and abilities. As a busy father, this is sometimes really tough to get. Exercise, coming back to that movement one. Remember that minimum 150 minutes of vigorous exercise, preferably outdoors and in nature. These days, I am getting this mostly by fitting it in by combining my passion for movement, cycling, etc., with my passion for getting places on my own power and decreasing my carbon footprint and impact. I commute by bike year-round to as many places and activities as I can, and I also include walking places wherever possible. Food, eating well, and locally, helps me to trust and ensure that the food that fuels my body and mind is of good quality and has the least impact on the world, and then also supports my fellow neighbors who produce it. And in our family, we're passionate about cooking our food from scratch and growing it. I love that I have a platform in both my PT practice and my coaching to help promote stewardship of our health and mind and body and to help others access their superpowers. Do any of you guys have any superpowers you want to mention now? No? Oh, don't be shy. We can talk after. Oh, Simone? A good attitude. Absolutely, yeah. Faith. Excellent. Line dance class. So another way to get that vigorous activity. Right on. Cool. Yoga. There we go. Oh, Solly? Being silly. Sometimes being silly can be very vigorous, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sometimes tough on the 49-year-old father. So in summary, I look at stewardship of my body and health as follows. I see that God has given us the gift of life and the gift of choice. I try to make choices that honor these gifts where I can, but it's a journey and an evolution for me. And He has made us all different. So how we do this will be different for each of us. And I haven't even touched upon the fact that it sounds like I'm talking to able-bodied people, which for the most part I am, but not everyone has the same physical abilities. And I can think of one of my profs in university at physio school who was a quadriplegic and had been since he fell climbing a tree when he was about 12 years old. And so all of these things would look very different for him. He's passed away now, but all these things would look very different for him. And so we just have to make those adjustments. But these stories and experiences have helped inspire and mold how I live my own life and how I practice physio. Christ says that we are to be His body on earth, the body of Christ, and that we all have roles to play. When we take good care of our health and our bodies, we are most ready and able to play our various roles. And as a bonus, I've noticed that often good stewardship of our health and bodies goes harmoniously with good stewardship of the earth. And I love the synergy that I find in that. Thank you.